Welcome to the Strang Report with Steve Strang on the Charisma Podcast Network. This episode was produced to discuss and address issues within our nation and around the world from a Christian worldview.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network. I'm Steve Strang, and today I'm talking to Representative Scott Plakin, who is the representative for my area in Tallahassee, but he is also a longtime friend, so I'm glad to welcome him today. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about a very significant bill that was passed that I'm actually going to write my print, or I should say my online Strang Report e-newsletter about tomorrow. So stay tuned after this message, and we're going to talk to Representative Scott Plakin about the Pastor Protection Act.
This podcast is sponsored by Brown Church Development Group. Your facility should be a reflection of your church culture. Brown Church Development Group's network of architects understands ministry and uses cutting-edge 3D software to help bring your vision to life. Integrating with Brown Church Development Group members, consultants, and builders, they create memorable designs seamlessly aligned with your ministry and your budget. Do you need a stunning facility designed to serve your vision? Call my friends at Brown Church Development Group today at 888-879-1338. Here's the phone number again, 888-879-1338. Or find them online at churchdevelopment.net/podcast. One more time, churchdevelopment.net/podcast. Now back to our story.
Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to you, Scott Plakin. We've been friends since, when, the 1980s sometime, is that right?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I remember going to the first Magic game in the old arena in around 1990 or so.
That was a long time. We went to the Soviet Union back in that same period. We've been friends, and of course, I knew you then as a businessman, and I knew that you had political aspirations, and what was it, 6-8 years ago, you ran for public office for the first time and were elected to the state legislature, and you have made a real impact there.
Well, I got elected with help from friends.
Help from friends.
Including
So should I mention you. That I was one of your first, or maybe the first, campaign contributor, and of course we worked very hard knocking on doors and holding signs on street corners and holding some fundraisers, and it's been a lot of fun. And
well, it's a matter of public record. You were actually the first contributor.
That's right. It is public record anyway. But anyway, you have been enormously effective in Tallahassee, so much so that there are a lot of people who don't like you, people who I would kind of consider on the other side. And what happened with the legislature that just adjourned last week and Governor Scott signed into law this Pastor Protection Act? We've actually reported on this on the Charisma News Service. Tell my listeners exactly what the Pastor Protection Act is and why it was necessary.
Well, again, thanks for having me on to discuss this. And you're right, the governor signed House Bill 43 into law last week. Basically, the Pastor Protection Act, as it's called, says that a pastor or other religious practitioner can't be compelled to perform any type of ceremony that violates their sincerely held religious beliefs. That's the first part of the bill. It's only a page and a half. The second part provides civil and criminal immunity from lawsuits or prosecution if a pastor were to decline to do a ceremony that violated their sincerely held religious beliefs, and also provides protection from tax benefits being removed. So the whole bill is only a page and a half, and it's a pretty simple concept. And after the Obergefell decision last June, we saw this as a way to
kind of— Which was a decision about same-sex marriage.
The same-sex marriage decision is a way to, in sort of a foundational way, to try to bring parties together to at least agree that pastors and other religious practitioners wouldn't have to perform a ceremony. But as simple as that sounds, there was quite a bit of disagreement in the House of Representatives. We did get it passed. It's a little over 80 of 120 votes, but there was almost 40 people voted against it.
Well, we know that a lot of the people who support, I guess, what you'd call gay rights have tried to punish people who didn't go along with them. And the cases that come to mind are the baker who wouldn't make a wedding cake and so forth. And there have been some judgments against them. So when this Supreme Court ruling came down, there were a lot of pastors that were just certain that same-sex couples were going to come in and demand that they perform weddings. Is that right?
Well, I think that after the Obergefell decision, it kind of brought up as many questions as it had answered if you look at the ruling. So I think the trajectory of public policy over the past 5 to 10 years, I don't think anybody can predict what's actually going to happen. So we thought it would be a good place to start this year with pastors. And in future years, we're already talking about ideas to increase the scope and go beyond this with other legislation to address things like what you said. There's numerous stories popping up where the Christian bakeries or wedding photographers, clerks of the court, adoption agencies, people that actually believe that what the Bible says about marriage, it's between one man and one woman. I mean, hundreds of civilizations across thousands of years have believed that. So to provide some conscious protection, the Supreme Court has ruled the way they did. But now the next step is what type of religious freedom are we going to maintain? And that's what this debate is about.
How did pastors respond to this? Did they go to Tallahassee? Did they speak up? Did you get the kind of support that you were hoping for?
We sure did, and I'm so thankful. And this is one of those situations with public policy where they really made a difference. There was, I would say, probably hundreds, in the low hundreds of pastors that made the trip up there. Some of them, Pastor Chris Walker, I think went about 10 times. Anthony Verdugo with the Christian Family Coalition out of Miami, probably about the same number of trips with groups of pastors from all over the state. And they got up and testified, many of them for the first time. This was new to them. And the members really took note. So I got to thank all the pastors and other believers that came up from around the state to make their voices heard. It was one of the best examples I've seen of that.
So these people were supportive, but you also had people that were anything but supportive. And I understand that you got called all kinds of nasty names.
Well, there's that. Yeah. You're right. Not everybody agreed, which was a little bit stunning to me, actually, because in America, you would like to think that we all could agree that this type of legislation would be okay. Well, a lot of people disagreed. What was strange about it, actually, is some of the LGBT groups, they opposed the bill. And we made an amendment late that clarified it. And some of them, Equality Florida, dropped their opposition. They didn't, of course, didn't support it. It was some of the elected officials, quite frankly, that were the most against it in the House chamber and in the Senate chamber. So some of these groups, they clearly didn't like it. But as long as it was clear and it only applied to pastors, they were sort of okay with it. So, but yeah, some of the debate on the House floor got pretty inflammatory with all kinds of things from, you know, racial overtones to you name it. In fact, in my closing, I made a comment that a lot of the – what bill are they talking about? Because this is a page and a half bill that simply provides conscience protection for pastors and other ministers and clergy.
What was the vote when it was finally done in both the House and the Senate?
The House, I think it was 82 or 83 out of 140. I actually don't recall. It was slightly over 80, a little over two-thirds. The Senate was almost two-thirds, I believe.
So that's pretty overwhelming. And Governor Scott, of course, signed it into law. What kind of response have you had from other parts of the country, if any?
Well, a number of other states have either embarked on legislation like this or are preparing to, from what I read in the news. I sort of copied Texas's legislation. It started out almost word for word with Texas. And what was interesting in Texas is their House voted 121-0 in favor of this bill, and their Senate 21-9 with an identical bill. And so even in the Texas legislature, they had an openly lesbian member and a transsexual or a pansexual member that voted in favor of it. And this was what I was trying.
Why is pansexual?
Well, we'll talk about that later. Anyway, they both voted for her. That's Representative Mary Gonzalez. And she even identified that this was a space where maybe we could come together and agree. And in Texas, they did. Florida, not so much. Some of the members of the Florida legislature decided that to debate strongly against it, which I was very disappointed because from the beginning of this, I thought with the many battles that lie ahead of some of the groups that we said, can't we just all agree that pastors should have this type of immunity. And obviously, there's a lot of people that disagree. There was actually Representative Rodriguez, during one of the committee stops, filed an amendment to the bill that was not accepted. It was actually withdrawn later on, to remove the immunity portion. And in my floor closing, I said, you know, this proves that this is necessary because a member of this legislature wanted to strip the immunity portion of the bill, which means that the implication is they'd be okay with a pastor being subject to these type of penalties.
What do you think this says about the future? Is this maybe a trend toward things that are a little more conservative, or do you think this is just a stopgap measure and that the trend is continuing to be more and more and more in the direction of the gay and lesbian, transsexual, and what is it, bisexual community?
Well, clearly the wind is at their back with the Obergefell decision. But as I said before, if you look at some of the ruling within that decision, it left a lot of questions unanswered. Specifically, where do people of faith, what is our protection for our religious freedom and our conscience protection? You know, the First Amendment of the United States Constitution, our country is founded on religious freedom. And my goal or dream, you might say, would be that the decision is what it is, but that somehow that we could get people on the other side is to acknowledge, let's just live side by side and let people of faith practice their faith, like using, you know, a bakery, some of these examples. Why not just go to the bakery next door? Why go to the devout Christian, like Miss Stutzman, I think is her name, out west? And I'd like to think it would be that way, but so far it's not that way. The other side is picking lawsuits, they're picking venues, and forcing these people to decide to either violate their faith or give up their business. And it's very unfortunate. So with this bill, I had hoped that everyone could agree, but like they did in Texas, but certain members of the Florida legislature decided to fight us on it, and very strongly. I know I sent you some of the videos today, the debate, and it was not a pleasant experience.
And some of the videos, we're going to have links on my newsletter when I write it tomorrow. People may want to get it and watch those links at that time. But, you know, it's a real intimidation, trying to intimidate the individuals that you mentioned, as well as others who look at it and are afraid to stand their ground. You know, there is a lot of things that have been approved through legislation that Christians might not approve of. Gambling, for example. We don't talk a whole lot about it, but at least you can choose not to gamble. You can choose to just ignore that whole aspect of life. But on this, you almost can't avoid it. They're trying to kind of force it down everybody's throat.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think it's so sad targeting these flower shops and bakeries. And I think her name is Bernadette Stutzman, 70-year-old lady that served the same-sex couple for many years with cupcakes and birthday cakes. And the guy's name was Rob. Says wanted her to perform this ceremony, puts her hands on Rob's and said, "Rob, I love you very much, but I disagree with that. And here's a couple other bakeries you can go to that'll help you out." And this is somebody that she did business with for many years. Well, Rob decided to lawyer up, and now the state is coming after her. They're suing her, trying to take her business. And then there's Cupcakes by Melissa, similar story. They were fined $135,000 by the government. So these are Christian people, the Klein family, that believe in the biblical definition of marriage, like for thousands of years has been that way. And in America, in this year, 2016, they're having their businesses taken away. So we see the Pastor Protection Act as a kind of first step to build on to in the future to try to address some of these other things. And part of the problem is it's happening so fast. Like I said, for thousands of years, the definition of marriage has been commonly understood. And as recently as 2009, Webster's Dictionary had marriage was defined as between one man and one woman. So now in these years, in our lifetimes, our Supreme Court has decided to redefine a word that has been commonly understood for millennia.
Most of my listeners are probably believers in Christ. And many of them have probably never heard of this, and they're finding out this is interesting, and they're wondering how this affects them. So how do you think this is going to affect the average Christian? And what would an average person do to try to do what's right and maybe just somehow stem the tide?
Well, for starters, believers need to be involved in public policy, because the other side of this, and groups that are act contrary to our beliefs, they're very active. They have lobbyists and everything else. You know, we live in a day where people can name American Idol contestants, but they can't name a Supreme Court justice, or sometimes even who the vice president is. So this is very important for believers to get engaged in public policy, whether it's encouraging people that are running for office, getting behind them that share our values, or in the case of a lot of these pastors, trekking up to Tallahassee to make your voice be heard. In our state legislature, anybody can come up and testify before a House or Senate committee. And we have many citizens come up there, but not enough that represent our point of view. You know, life gets busy, but we see these situations happening around the country. And I can't recall the quote, but there's something where something happened to somebody else and you said nothing and then they came for you. And unless we get involved with public policy, a lot of the values that made our country great, one of being a key being religious freedom, is not going to be there in the way that our founders envisioned it. And it's up to us to become engaged and reach out, support people that believe in these values and testify and Facebook things and every way that we can.
Well, that's a good word. Our time is about over. I want to thank you, Representative Scott Plakin, for being my guest today on the Strang Report on the Charisma Podcast Network.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to The Strang Report with Steve Strang. To read more from Steve, visit his blog, The Strang Report, on charismamag.com. Again, that's The Strang Report on charismamag.com.
This has been a production of the Charisma Podcast Network. Steve and Joyce Strang are the founders and owners of CPN. Dr. Steve Green is the executive producer of the Charisma Podcast Network. We intend to honor God with every podcast and remain thankful to our advertisers and supporters who make these podcasts possible.